From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. It's the 9th day of October. December corn today, a penny and a half lower at 394 and a quarter. The March at 405 and a half down one. July at 414 and a half unchanged for the day. November beans at 923 and three quarters, up three and a quarter. January 938, two and three quarters higher. The July contract at 968 and three quarters, up three and a quarter. Bean oil futures down 14 cents. The bean meal up $3.10. July soft red winter wheat at 516 and a quarter lower. Live cattle futures up 30 cents at 108.47 and a half. Feeders finished at 144.50, up $2.47 and a half. And lean hogs $1.10 higher at $62.80. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing and by Stuart Peterson to take a look at these numbers. And I think, Jackie, I want to start with one of those things that's really important for farmers to pay attention to. We always do this. Can you go through the support and resistance numbers for me this week?
No, they definitely are. And we have to remember, you know, that this is a continuous monthly chart that I use. So these are big important numbers is what they are. So when you look at December corn right now, 391 is support, 361, and then 313. 415 is resistance, 439 and 473. We filled the gap. We managed to close above it. And now we're just trying to figure out what we want to do and whether we've got enough information to push us any higher. On March, we've got $4 for support, 395 and 370, and resistance at 411, 425, and 448. There, too, we just need to find some direction, I think, is the best way to put it. On beans for November, 919 is support, $9, and then 881. Resistance 942, 955, and 986, and we've continued to trade above the downtrend line, significantly above the downtrend line. So that's really positive. And when you look at a daily chart, November beans actually are above all the moving averages. So it's pretty interesting. On March, we've got 914 as a support level, 839, 780, and then resistance at 960, 997, and 1034.
What do you see for the managed money at this time?
Interesting shifts going on. You know how you and I have been talking about so much of this is money flow everywhere. When you look at soft red wheat, we went from 4,000 short last week to 18,000 short this week. Corn went from 98,000 short to 106,000 short. Now, to me, that makes sense because I believe we're doing a lot of spreading. Beans actually are net long 1,000 compared to being short 22,000 last week. So we're buying beans and we're spreading against corn and wheat. And you look at soy meal, 43,000 short compared to 44,000 last week. Not a lot of move there. Soy oil, 25,000 long compared to 17,000 long. So they've added to their soy oil positions too. And that's all part of spreading too.
So we have lots of things happening this week. Let's take the first one, which has been in play for a while now, weather, especially for the northwestern Corn Belt.
Oh, my goodness gracious. My heart goes out to those guys. I'm telling you, this has just been one of those horrible, horrible situations. And so this is what I looked at, Todd. I looked at the acres at risk. Now, when I say acres at risk, on corn, I looked at how much corn was mature in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Nebraska, and took the percentage that wasn't mature and looked at the bushels that created based on their average, not based on a high number like last year. And in beans, I looked at how much had been harvested and how much remained to be harvested in those same three states and how many bushels that represented. So in North Dakota, they're 92% mature, and they would have 34.3 million bushels at risk. And on beans, they are 33% harvested, which would leave them at 160.9 million bushels at risk. When you look at South Dakota, 88% mature on corn, they would have about 91 million bushels at risk. And when you look at their beans, they're only 27% harvested, which means they'd have about 180.4 million bushels. And please remember, this is only the stuff that I can see. That doesn't mean that there isn't a lot of other stuff that's at risk. But Nebraska, corn mature 91%, would leave them at 155.9 million bushels of corn. On beans, they are 35% harvested, and that would leave 213 million bushels. If you add that all up, it would say 281 million bushels of corn would be at risk in those three states. And beans, now that's 554 million bushels. That's a lot. Now, you know, it's just kind of a barometer on what we're looking at, and I thought people might be interested in it.
No, I guess we'll have to keep a very close eye on that. The snowfall and cold weather is beginning to creep in there today, tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday, probably the lowest temperature snowfall we'll see pretty soon as well. So we'll be watching that really closely, and we'll hear more, of course, about that from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in just a moment. USDA report is due tomorrow. It's the WASDE and crop production report for October. I'm wondering what you see in that report, because as you just delineated, there's still an awful lot of crop that has yet to be moved into the marketplace, and that seems like a September report as well as an October report, frankly, in terms of what they're going to be able to get a look at.
Oh, that's absolutely the truth. And, you know, it's very interesting, of course, because when you look at carryout on corn, our average estimate right now is 1.684 billion bushels compared to 2.19 on the last report, and that primarily is a reflection of the change in the crop production from the year before. Beans, now this I thought was interesting, 510 million compared to 640 million on the last one. And boy, that's where the bean number scares me up in the Dakotas. Wheat, 1.014 billion, and same as last September. When we look at the world numbers, excuse me, for 18-19, we basically see a drop in the corn of 6 million metric tons, 2 million metric tons off of beans, and wheat stayed the same for 1920, basically a 10 million metric ton drop off of corn. We're seeing a 3 million metric ton drop approximately off of beans and about a million metric tons coming off of wheat. So certainly biased to, I would say, neutral to bullish type of report. We'll see once what they actually come in with.
Do you have day of and 2 week later numbers as usual?
I do. I was going to tell you a little something about the USD WASDE report. In the last 25 years, the October corn yield has showed up 2 bushels below the September only 4 times. And in 2010, that was 6.7 bushels. In 1995, it was 4.5 bushels. And in the other 2 years, it was 90. We're 93 in 2000. For soybeans, there were only 3 times in the last 25 years where the October yield was at least 1 bushel lower than September. Biggest deviation was 2.4 back in 2003 when we had that big aphid breakout. The other 2 years were 95 and 98. So, you know, I'll temper this by saying this is an unusual year. So it wouldn't surprise me one bit if we do see a bigger deviation than what these numbers look like. But just, you know, we've only been different than the September 4 times in the last 25 years on both corn and beans. Now, when you look at the WASDE report on the day of for corn, excuse me, positive change has been up 13 or down 6. And 2 weeks later, it's either up 14 or down 24. You know, this has a negative bias, just because in most cases we're further with the crop than where we are this year. So this too could be something different. When you look at beans, up 22 on the day of the report or down 13. And 2 weeks after the report, up 32 or down 56. And so you can see there's potential there for lots and lots of volatility.
You reminded me, not nicely, by the way, about that Asian soybean aphid breakout in 2003. And that was a pest that came in, actually, from China, if I remember correctly. So it was a foreign pest that happened to manage to make its way into the U.S. soybean crop, which reminds me that we are in the middle of negotiations with China. There's always something happening there this week. Naturally, the Chinese negotiators are in town. Tomorrow's supposed to be the big day for that. Any news there that you want to talk about?
Well, you know, the new tariff deadline is October 15th. So, you know, something needs to happen here. They're meeting tomorrow and Friday. When you look at what might affect some of the negotiations, you know, these protests in Hong Kong and how China handles it could be a big one. A lot of headlines in China said that they're open to a partial agreement. You know, they still buck every inch of the way on stealing intel and everything else. But I thought it was interesting that there's still companies that are leaving China for better export environments. Bank of England came out today saying that this trade war is hurting global growth. But I think if you actually read through the lines, it says their main concern is Brexit and what lies ahead for England, you know, because they too are in a turmoil at this point in time. I thought it was interesting. Apple is, you know, being hounded by China. They're saying that Apple is an accomplice to the protesters now, that they approved this police tracking map app for Hong Kong. So in other words, the protesters can actually look at the map of Hong Kong and they can live see where the police are actually at and where the protesters are. So it gives them a big plus, I guess, is what you'd have to say. So a lot of things going on. I truly believe that when you look at, well, that this leads right into Brazil. Brazil, they're planting in the irrigated areas, Todd, but the rain now has been pushed off to November for the non-irrigated. And so if I'm China and I'm depending on Brazil and Argentina, which has all its economic problems, to supply me, I think I'm becoming more and more open to a partial trade agreement, if not a full trade agreement, because this could get to be a pretty messy situation as we move forward.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great one.
You too. That is Jackie Vake. She is with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In today's agricultural news, let's start with USMCA, or the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement that has yet to be brought up to Congress in the United States. AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka has told the Washington Post that it would be, quote, a colossal mistake for the House to vote soon on the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement. The White House and key business groups, including agriculture, are pushing for swift approval of the president's replacement of the North American Free Trade Agreement. Democrats and labor leaders still have some concerns about worker protections enshrined in that deal. Jim Cramer of CNBC interviewed the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, about the prospects for passing the USMCA. In that interview, the Speaker said that House Democrats are on a path to a yes vote on the trade deal.
When the others are saying bring it to the floor, there is nothing to bring to the floor yet. But we hope that we're on a path to yes. The most important issue outstanding is enforceability. If you don't have enforcement in a trade agreement, you just have a nice conversation. The idea that we would give a victory to the president is irrelevant. It's a victory for the American people.
It could be a victory, but not until the House and the Senate both pass the USMCA. For his part, Jim Cramer, who hosts Mad Money on CNBC, is positive about the potential outcome.
This is very big because what she's saying, there's an interesting editorial in the Washington Post saying, will the Speaker just accede to a party line and not let the president have a victory? She's not thinking like that at all. And I felt the enforcement when I spoke with her at length about this. It's really about trying to enforce Mexico to do the right thing. Very positive. Thinks it can happen. I think this was a breakthrough.
Breakthrough or not, the votes still need to be taken. Democrats have just returned from a trip to Mexico where they were feeling out the labor issues related to the USMCA. Well, from the United States Department of Agriculture comes a different news story today. Gary Crawford reports that it is possible this year, 2019, might be the first year in 40 years that the United States runs an agricultural trade deficit.
A worrisome agricultural trade trend here in the last few months, with ag exports declining, ag imports rising.
For four of the last 5 months, we've had a negative trade balance.
Agriculture Department trade economist Cameron Daugherty, we now have complete trade numbers for the first 11 months of the fiscal year from October through August. The August trade deficit was over $800 million alone, but Daugherty says FY19 will still wind up with a trade surplus.
For the fiscal year, there, yes, we're still positive, and we still expect it to complete this year with a positive.
Of about $5.2 billion, but if you look at the calendar year, there's a chance, he says, we'll end up with an overall ag trade deficit. If that happens, it will be the first time in over 40 years. Back to the fiscal year, first 11 months, ag exports at $124.5 billion.
Down 6.5% from fiscal year 2018. Imports up 3%, and trade balance is down 81.5%.
Ouch. Exports down for corn, soybeans, and cotton, up for wheat. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Well, let's stay with trade for this one final story. The Japan trade deal President Trump signed earlier in the week is worth a whole lot of money, billions in new exports, in fact, for U.S. agriculture, and it erases most of the U.S. losses. From pulling out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or the TPP, the deal provides staged tariff relief for about $3 billion worth of beef, pork, poultry, potatoes, some fruits, wine, cheese, whey, ethanol, and more, plus immediate tariff relief for $1.3 billion worth of nuts, fruit, sweet corn, milk products, and grain sorghum. U.S. Trade Ambassador Robert Lighthizer negotiated and signed the massive agreement with President Trump at the White House.
This is a very big trade deal. This is about $55 billion worth of trade. With this, we'll have more than 95% of the GDP that would have been in TPP. So it's very important for farmers.
The deal is especially good for pork producers trying to close the tariff advantage gained by former TPP partners. And Europe, with its own Japan deals, says National Pork Producers Trade Chief Nick Giordano.
We don't want to play catch up. We want in today, and we want in at the most favorable rate.
And now USTR's Robert Lighthizer says that's what pork and other producers will get.
Japan is the biggest market for the United States in beef, pork, wheat, and it's a substantial market in a variety of other things, including potatoes, which weren't mentioned, and a lot of the nuts and other products. It also affects wine and the like. So we think we'll have substantial additional sales as a result of this.
Farm leaders, including AFBF, or American Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall, joined Mr. Lighthizer, President Trump, and Japanese officials for the trade deal signing earlier in the week. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Oh, on this Wednesday afternoon, we need to turn our attention to the weather forecast. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. 2019 is just a year of wild weather. More coming. Tell me about the Northwest and the cold that is bringing some snow there.
Absolutely. What a year. You said it right. We are looking at a cold surge now moving across Canada's prairies and down into the northwestern plains. And this process will continue as we go forward through the next 48 hours. By the time we get to a Friday morning, we will have significant freezes all the way down to the Texas, West Texas cotton country. All of the Texas panhandle will freeze up, and we'll look for some cold working its way into the western Corn Belt, parts of Iowa and Minnesota both. We'll see freezes, hard freezes in the western portions of both states. In the meantime, the clash in air masses is going to create quite the storm. A bit of snow is already underway now across the Northwest Plains into Canada's prairies. But as we go into a Thursday night and from there into Saturday, we're going to see a very quick deepening low-pressure system that will move from parts of the Kansas-Nebraska border up to southwestern parts of Ontario. And in response to the intensification of this event, we will see some very heavy snow. The accumulations will run 8 to 16 inches in general from central two-thirds of South Dakota into southern and east-central parts of Manitoba, with some totals of 16 to over 30 inches occurring from the north-south Dakota border area, kind of the central portions of those states, up into southern Manitoba. And this will bury all kinds of things. The livestock is going to be seriously stressed. There's going to be power outages. There will be a blizzard eventually here Friday night into Saturday. And a lot of crops will come down, and those that don't come down are going to be deeply buried in the snow. A lot of moisture content here, probably from 2 to 3.5 inches of moisture will be tied up in the snow. And, of course, the ground is saturated underneath it, so the flood potential will be high as we melt the snow.
So we'll cover South Dakota, a portion of North Dakota, into Winnipeg, Manitoba, which is right above North Dakota. Parts of Minnesota, I assume, will get tagged too?
Well, Minnesota is going to see more rain than snow, but there will be a changeover for them as well, and that will occur as we go from Friday into the weekend, Friday night in particular. Northwest and west central parts of Minnesota, primarily in the Red River Valley, will see some heavy accumulations. Not quite as impressive as what I just described, but we'll probably see some 4 to 8 inches near the Red River, near the borders of the Dakotas. And everywhere else in Minnesota, we're probably talking about upwards to 4 inches. There'll be some local pockets maybe getting up to 5 or 6 in the north.
Coldest temperatures are when and where?
The coldest temperatures will be Friday and Saturday mornings, and we're expecting those to occur from the central parts of Minnesota and the northwestern, we'll call it one-fifth of Iowa, westward, all the way to Montana and southward into the northwestern part of the Texas panhandle. In fact, there's some model data that suggests hard freezes will be possible all the way down into West Texas cotton areas. Not very widespread there, but anyway, as far as the Corn Belt is concerned, certainly the majority of Minnesota will see freezes at one time or another. The hard freezes will be in the west. And similarly, probably the northwestern half of Iowa will see some freezes, and then the northwestern one-fifth will probably see the harder freezes. Further to the east, we'll see temperatures in the 30s as we go on into next week. I think the coldest temperatures in the lower Midwest will probably occur Wednesday, a week from now. It leaves a lot of time for changes to take place, but we could see some frost occur in some of those areas at that time, but probably not before then. There's going to be a lot of clouds and wind in the northern Midwest outside of the areas I've talked about, and that'll hold the temperatures up a little bit, mostly 30s, though.
Right, and then after this, once we get into the latter part of or second part of October, what do you see?
Well, we're going to take a little break. It'll be short-term, maybe a week's worth of dry weather. We'll see the cold finally abating, and we'll see a nice warm-up take place. But unfortunately, we've got a little tropical moisture that's going to come up from Mexico that's going to create a little bit of precipitation again in the middle part of next week in the central parts of the plains and the portion of the Midwest. And then right after that, there may be another larger storm that could impact a fair amount of the plains on the 19th and 20th and into the Midwest, the 20th into the 23rd. And after that, there may be another surge of cool air, but it probably won't have a lot of precipitation in it. So we're going to have kind of an uncomfortable middle two-thirds of the month of October, but I think conditions in the last days of the month will be much better.
Clearly, this is going to slow harvest down. Will that happen across the whole of the Corn Belt?
Yes. Most of the rain that occurs in those the central and eastern Midwest is going to be a lot more brief and less impacting, but there will still be some strong thunderstorms, for instance, that will occur here on Thursday going into Friday from Oklahoma into Illinois and parts of Michigan and Wisconsin, and that will obviously have an impact on those areas. So the ground isn't quite as wet in those regions as they are in the upper Midwest.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Have a good day.
You too. That is Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated.